At the legislature today, if approved by the full legislature, there would be four constitutional amendments for voters to consider in November, from protecting water resources for our use to protecting hunting and fishing for future generations, from the Future Fund to the future of events at the Boy Scout Reserve. They were all discussed at the legislature today. And good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. On crossover day, the House went through 60 items on the daily calendar, passing bills such as House Bill 2446, making soliciting a minor a felony. House Bill 4156, the Electronic Toll Collection Act. And House Bill 4168, requiring items purchased by state agencies to be made in America. Before the lengthy floor session, lawmakers on the Judiciary Committee went over the Senate's water protection bill. Aaron Payne reports.
Senate Bill 373 relating to water resources protection was sent to the House nearly 1 month ago to go through three committee stops. 2 weeks ago, the bill made it through the Health and Human Resource Committee with amendments. Today, the House Judiciary Committee briefly looked over its substitute, but predominantly used the meeting to hear from Downstream Strategies President Evan Hansen. The Environmental Consulting Service recently did a preliminary study on potential pollution sources in what is called a zone of critical concern on the Elk River that was contaminated by the chemical spill from Freedom Industries. The study took into account a combination of driving around the river, looking on Google Earth at the area, and receiving reports from various agencies for potential contaminants in the zone, where contaminants in the water would take 5 hours to reach a water intake. The report found 62 potential sources along the river leading to West Virginia American Water's intake.
The type of contaminant source with the highest count, the highest number, is car dealerships with 10. And then there's 7 gas stations and 5 permitted discharge pipes. And you can see the list. These are all the types of potential contaminant sources that had 3 or more above the intake. Now, all of these were listed for a reason. Even though they may not have thousands of gallons of harmful chemicals stored there, there are some contaminants that are stored at these sites.
This information frightened some lawmakers, but Hansen assured this was positive news due to the ability to manage the threat.
It's true there's a lot of potential significant contaminant sources, but I think this is largely a good news report, not a bad news report, in that most of these are relatively small, easily managed potential sources that already have systems in place. For example, underground storage tanks at gas stations are regulated well and unlikely to leak.
The report also looked at potential contaminant sites that had the same permit as Freedom Industries, which led to some confusion in regard to regulation. Hansen said he discovered 12 sites and offered a suggestion to help regulate those sites by way of permits specific to each.
One of our recommendations is that for any facility that's covered under the NPDES program already, we recommend that individual permits be required if they're in the zone of critical concern. And the reason for that is that, number one, they would have to go out for public notice and comment so that the local public water utility and emergency planners and local governments would be alerted to the fact that these permits are being written and can comment on them. And number two, the DEP could include site-specific provisions that require them to take steps that are consistent with the source water protection plan.
Hansen believes that if this had been in place, the recent spill would have been prevented.
I think the risk of this happening would have been drastically minimized, because if you had gone through the planning process and put systems in place to minimize your risks, the first risk you would have identified here is the Freedom site, because it's the largest quantities of the most harmful chemicals. And you would have put systems in place to figure out a way to minimize those risks.
After the presentation, delegates had many questions, one of which was how much it would cost companies to implement the recommendation that they create and routinely update a source water protection plan, which includes updating inventory of potential risks. Hansen said the cost could vary. For smaller businesses with few potential risks, it could cost around $1,000. And for larger businesses, it could cost up to $10,000. Another question was asked by Delegate John McCuskey on how the zone of critical concern was determined.
My question involves the 25-mile/5-hour plan. Could you explain to me just a little bit what that is?
Well, the 5 hours is to try to protect an area such that if a spill occurred, it would get to the intake quickly. I mean, that's obviously the most critical area. And my understanding of the way that that zone is delineated is through some type of computer model that determines how fast the river flows in some conditions and where it takes 5 hours to get to the intake.
The original Senate bill included a number of exemptions for some storage tanks. Delegate Mike Manypenny asked Hansen what his recommendation for those exemptions would be.
There was a bill that came over from the Senate which had several exclusions for tanks under 1,100 gallons, I believe. What recommendations do you have in regards to those exclusions? Do you believe that we need to keep those exclusions in there, or do they need better checks and balances?
My recommendation, because the session is ending soon and we need to take action sooner rather than later, is to remove the exclusions for now. That doesn't mean that there might be some valid exclusions that should be included later. Keep in mind that the Act requires the DEP to go through a rulemaking process related to these permits. So that would be an appropriate time for the case to be made for why exclusions are necessary.
So your recommendation is to let it go through the rulemaking process?
Right, to remove the exclusions from the Act and let the DEP handle it.
Delegate Misha Pora also asked Hansen about a recommendation by the Chemical Safety Board and others asking for medical monitoring.
The second question I would have is in regards to do a due service. We're asking a lot of different departments to do a lot of different things. Do you believe that it would be appropriate? One of your recommendations in your first report was that we talked about the Chemical Safety Board recommendations, and I know that there's been an amendment to attempt to merge those here in this document. Do you believe that it would be appropriate to have a commission or a task force that would go throughout making sure that these recommendations are effectively attested to the things that need to be protecting the public?
Yes, I think that would be important.
Having heard the report, the judiciary will later determine if any amendments are needed before they approve the bill. Then Senate Bill 373 moves on to the House Finance Committee. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
The House also considered today an amendment to the state constitution that would allow the Boy Scouts to use their facility in Fayette County to make a profit without surrendering their nonprofit status. Supporters of the bill cited the economic boom in Fayette County and surrounding counties during the Boy Scout Jamboree held this past summer as an example of what similar events held year-round could do for the state. However, Delegate Barbara Fleshour opposed the resolution, saying the Boy Scouts is not an organization that needs monetary benefits.
I have in my hand the Boy Scouts 2011 990 IRS form. It's a half an inch thick, listing all their assets. They must complete this form, and it's for entities that are exempt from taxation. It shows that the Boy Scouts had $534 million in equity or unrestricted assets. That is a half a billion dollars.
The resolution was adopted by the House with a vote of 94-2. Senators also had a full calendar today, voting on 11 bills and 3 constitutional amendments and 2 bills authorizing salary increases. Ashton Maurer reports.
In a rare occurrence at the State House, senators debated 3 possible constitutional amendments on the floor, changes that will ultimately be sent to the people for their approval. Senate Joint Resolution 10 proposes a constitutional amendment designating the right to hunt and fish for West Virginians. Senator Corey Palumbo amended the resolution on the floor today, clarifying that the people of West Virginia have the right to hunt and fish the state's game, but the state still maintains the ability to regulate regulate those activities. Senator Clark Barnes rose in opposition to the amendment, saying he is an avid hunter and angler himself, but he worried the resolution may interfere with personal property rights.
And what I fear in this amendment is that we are trumping those private property rights which our ancestors were so concerned about. Mr. President, I'm not urging the fellow members to vote one way or another, but I did want to express my concerns. I don't believe that the right to hunt and fish trumps private property rights.
The amendment passed, and so did the resolution on a vote of 31-2, with Senators Barnes and Mike Hall voting against it. Senators then moved on to Senate Joint Resolution 12, proposing a constitutional amendment claiming the waters of the state for the use and benefit of its citizens. The resolution came from Senate Majority Leader John Unger, who has been increasingly vocal about protecting the resource since the Elk River chemical spill last month.
It says, "It shall be the policy of the state of West Virginia that the water resources of this state shall be protected, conserved, utilized, and developed for the benefit, enjoyment, and general welfare of its citizens, consistent with and subject to the riparian rights and groundwater rights of the owners of real property."
Senate Minority Leader Mike Hall questioned the intent of the resolution, however, ensuring the rights of citizens wouldn't be superseded by the state upon its passage.
The state could not say, "Hey, we, our right to develop your water, Mr. Landowner, or whatever, is not, we supersede your right to develop it." I mean, now we're getting in an legal area here that's kind of above me, but
I've been told, Senator, that that's protected under another clause of eminent domain. But this particular one, no, the state cannot take that because we specifically have here, consistent with and subject to the riparian rights and groundwater rights of the owners of real property. So again, it's really focusing in on the citizen and not the state.
Okay, so the assumption is that the capacity of this of the state to conserve, utilize, develop, and protect cannot supersede these rights that are delineated in the last line.
That's right.
The final Senate joint resolution taken up for consideration was SJR 14, protecting the state's future fund and designating how the interest earned from the fund can be spent. The resolution couples with Senate Bill 461, Senate President Jeff Kessler's bill creating a future fund. The fund is created through statute, but as Senate Finance Chair Roman Prezioso explained, how those funds can be used after its establishment must then be determined by the people. The amendment proposes restricting access to the principal for 6 years following its creation and restricts its appropriation for things like education, infrastructure, or tax relief measures. The resolution passed unanimously. If all three resolutions are passed by the House, they will appear on the ballot in November for approval by the people. Voting on the floor transitioned from constitutional amendments to bills as senators discussed pay raises for teachers and state police forensic lab employees. Senate Bill 391 made its way through the committee process with major changes by both the Education and Finance Committees. The bill came from the governor and originally authorized a 2% across-the-board pay increase for teachers and school service personnel. Education Chair Senator Bob Plymouth tried to up that to a $1,000 raise, but Prezioso said the state couldn't find the additional $5 million that would have been added to the bill's bottom line. On the floor today, Plymouth said he and the Finance Chair had reached a compromise, giving teachers an $847 raise. The compromise, he said, keeps the fiscal note at its original $32 million total, but also raises the starting salary for teachers to more than $32,000 a year, helping to attract young professionals to the field. His amendment was accepted and the bill passed with two voting against it, Senators Mitch Carmichael and Senator Brooks McCabe. West Virginia Education Association President Dale Lee said after the vote, the increase for teachers was a good first step, but he will push for the $1,000 pay raise as the bill moves over to the House. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
Coming up, the city of Charleston just hosted a convention of travel writers. We'll find out how it went. But first, here's a look at some of the bills that have passed the Senate and have been referred to the House of Delegates. Senate Bill 6, requiring a prescription for cold relief products that can be used to make methamphetamine. Senate Bill 12, relating to expedited partner therapy treatment for sexually transmitted diseases. Senate Bill 58, relating to marriage and annulments. Senate Bill 90, creating the criminal offense for interfering or preventing someone to call for emergency assistance. Senate Bill 95, creating the felony offense for DUI causing serious bodily injury. Senate Bill 209, allowing special needs students to participate in graduation ceremonies. Senate Bill 310, adjusting penalties for the willful failure to pay child support. Senate Bill 336, allowing first responders to possess and administer medication to treat drug overdoses. Senate Bill 353, relating to timber theft in state forests. Senate Bill 356, reforming the state purchasing process. Senate Bill 381, requiring CPR to be taught in public schools. Senate Bill 394, redesignating the Health Services Scholarship Program as the Health Sciences Services Program. Senate Bill 395, relating to investigating welfare benefit fraud. Senate Bill 397, expanding the scope of activities considered financial exploitation of the elderly. Senate Bill 408, relating to parole. Senate Bill 450, relating to the sale and consumption of alcoholic liquors in outdoor dining areas. And Senate Bill 461, creating the Future Fund. This week, hundreds of travel writers and tour operators from 11 states were in Charleston to see a showcase of everything this city has to offer travelers. In the aftermath of the Elk River chemical spill, many citizens wondered if convention business would go away and if tourism would dry up. Here to talk about this with us is Alisa Bailey, the president and CEO of the Charleston Visitors and Convention Bureau. Welcome. Glad
Thank
to
you
see
very
you
much.
Here. So how did it go, this Travel South Showcase? How did it go?
Well, we had a goal of 500 attendees, and we had 540, so I think that speaks volumes that they were ready to come and do business. It was the first time ever held in the state of West Virginia, so we were fortunate to have all these tour operators and travel writers to show them exactly what Charleston has to offer, and the state. We were partners with the state in this venture.
What did they say about the water?
You know, these people are from the Southeast, and they've been through BP, they've been through Katrina, they've been through hurricanes on the East Coast. Actually, the tourism industry were the first people to call us after the water was contaminated to say, what can we do to help? So in many ways, they were anxious to get here to see it see us for the first time, to see all the things we have to offer, but they were also here morally supporting us. And they just, these people are going to bring tours later on. So they just were not concerned. I didn't hear one complaint or one question about it.
All right, very good. What kind of hit, though, did tourism business take right after the crisis in January?
Well, right after the crisis, just of the 13 businesses in Charleston that responded to my query, it was a $1 million. And of course, it's an ongoing expense for businesses. It was an ongoing expense for their employees as well. And I didn't have any access to the database of a 9-county area. So I believe it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And we do intend to fund an economic impact just so we can get our arms around what kind of impact something like this might have in the future.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you study leisure travelers or study travel writers about what they feel their image of West Virginia is right now?
Well, we are doing two different studies. We're studying the leisure travelers who have called about getting information either through the State Division of Tourism to us, they want to know about Charleston, or the people that contact us directly to see if they're planning to come to Charleston, and if not, we ask them the open question, why, to see if it comes up. My bigger concern, 80% of what we do in Charleston is getting those meetings and conventions here, and so my bigger concern is what do the meeting planners think, and we are also polling them. We're typically against several cities to try to get a big meeting here to Charleston. And so I'm very concerned that perhaps my competitors would mention it time and time again, even after maybe it's out of the minds of a meeting planner.
They would actually say, oh, you don't want to go to Charleston. They've got water problems.
Well, we're in a competitive environment here, and it's big money bringing a convention in. And so they're using all the tools in their toolbox. We're trying to use all the tools in ours. And really, really, we're at this exciting time in Charleston with $100 million worth of tourism infrastructure renovations going on. So we're going to have a lot to sell. We just have to determine if this is going to be a deterrent and how do we communicate that it's not going to happen, that we're clean, and it's a great place to visit.
Would it help if the legislature does pass Senate Bill 373, which is the bill to regulate and inspect above-ground water tanks? Is that something that you can show meeting planners and say, here, this is what our legislature did, this is what our government is going to do, so this will never happen again?
I don't know the particulars of the bill, so I cannot speak emphatically that yes, that will help me. I do know that we either need to enforce existing regulations or we need to enact bills that will ensure the public in general. A lot of the public get their information from family and friends, and so the citizens in our area are the ones that I'm targeting to start spreading the message that everything's good. And until we're all comfortable and we're not talking about it on Facebook and we feel comfortable, either through legislation or through other communication from experts that we trust, then I'm afraid I can't sell it to people on the outside world.
Charleston Mayor Danny Jones recently, I think, shared on Facebook that he was in California at an event. And the kind of image out there, the thought out there was, all of West Virginia's water is contaminated. Every place in West Virginia is contaminated. And he had a hard time explaining to people, no, it was just nine counties. We have 55. Will the entire state of West Virginia be affected by this crisis that was only in nine counties?
Well, I think it has been affected. It's wild and wonderful. That's the brand of the state. I was very gratified that Secretary of Commerce Keith Burdett is going to invest in some tourism marketing to actually, you know, see what's going on and then send the right communication. And we're doing that on a smaller level. But I do think it's necessary because I don't think people know the difference. If you're a tourist, you do not know the difference between the Elk River and the New River, for example. I know my colleagues over in the New River are very concerned about, you know, their whole livelihood is rafting you on clean river. They don't want to raft you on rivers with chemicals in it, and they're afraid that people will not differentiate between the two.
Well, I'm glad this showcase went very well. Congratulations for that, and I hope they all come back and send a whole bunch of people with them.
Well, we're counting on that. Thank
very
you.
Very good. Alisa Bailey with the Charleston Convention and Visitors Bureau. Thank you. And here's a look at some of the bills passed by the House of Delegates and will now be considered by the State Senate. House Bill 2020 relating to conditions of bond for defendants in cases of crimes between family or household members. House Bill 2387 relating to reasonable accommodations under the West Virginia Fair Housing Act for persons with disabilities who need assistive animals. House Bill 2477 permitting certain auxiliary lighting on motorcycles. House Bill 2757 creating a private cause of action for a dog attack that has led to the destruction of the animal. House Bill 2966, relating to employment and privacy protection of online user names and passwords. House Bill 4003, relating to the dual jurisdiction to counties where a student who lives in one county and attends school in another county in order to enforce truancy policies. House Bill 4006, relating to the possession and distribution of child pornography. House Bill 4014, increasing criminal penalties for littering. House Bill 4135, designating the first Thursday in May as the West Virginia Day of Prayer. House Bill 4147, relating to emergency preparedness. House Bill 4175, the West Virginia Small Business Emergency Act. House Bill 4186, relating to the procedures for issuing a concealed weapon license. House Bill 4196, requiring the Workforce Investment Council to provide information and guidance to local workforce investment boards that would enable them to better educate both men and women about higher-paying jobs. House Bill 4217, relating to Medicaid reports to the legislature. House Bill 4236, creating the Sexual Assault Nurse Examination Network. House Bill 4283, raising the minimum wage. House Bill 4284, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And House Bill 4336, limiting the time the state board may control local county school systems. And this has been The Legislature Today. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org. The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at WVAFLCIO.org.